Okay, thank you very much for the introduction. I would like to talk about neutrino masses today and the possible role that gravity could play in generating them. This is a project that started about 3 years ago in collaboration with my back then PhD supervisor, Guy Advali, at the Max Planck Institute for Physics and the LMU in Munich. And there have been some follow-up papers with other collaborators last year and this year. So you all know that there's a huge gap between the neutrino masses and the other charged fermions of the standard model, and this is widely seen as unnatural. So people are expecting that the neutrino masses are probably not generated through the conventional Higgs mechanism, but we need some new physics beyond the standard model. And what is usually done is people go to high energies. So in the ultraviolet, they develop mechanisms like the CISO mechanism or large excited dimensions. And what all of these models have in common is that the neutrinos get a mass contribution from the Higgs condensate at the electroweak scale. And then we need some kind of new mechanism that explains why the neutrino masses are suppressed with respect to this scale. So this is schematically shown with this Weinberg operator here. For the CISO mechanism, the suppression comes through the very heavy right-handed neutrino. There we have a Majorana neutrino assumption. And for the large extra-dimensional case, the explanation would be that the left-handed neutrino living on the 3+1 dimensional brain of the standard model has a very small wave function overlap with the right-handed neutrino living in the higher dimensional bulk. So what we try to explore, whether it's possible to explain the neutrino masses not by high energy physics, but by new low energy physics. And I would like to give you a very brief summary of what we were thinking about. We just took the standard model as it is, and we didn't add any new symmetry groups, new extra particles, or anything like an extra dimension. We just took the standard model as it is, and we coupled it to gravity. So we know we can treat gravity as a low energy effective quantum field theory. We can couple it minimally to gravity, and we observe that gravity has an inherent source of chiral symmetry breaking in the presence of a theta term. And I will go more into detail soon. I just would like to briefly summarize is that the idea is that this theta term actually has physical consequences for the standard model, which could happen on a large variety of scales. So the scale is a free parameter, and what we do is we constrain this parameter phenomenologically and observe that the scale can only be present in a very small window between milli-electron volt and electron volt energy scales, which was very surprising to us. And we saw this scale then would be coincident with the neutrino mass scale and also with the scale of dark energy. So this is a lot of information. I will go into all the details now. And the first thing I would like to do is to answer this question, to remind you of something similar that we know is happening in QCD. So we are calling QCD for help. We are building up our model on an analogy to QCD effects. So in QCD, we know that we have this theta term. Theta is an angular parameter. G is the gluon field strength. G tilde is the Hodge dual. I'm omitting all parameters and any coefficients. I'm omitting them here for simplicity. The main thing I would like to point out here is that this GG tilde is a total derivative. So historically, people thought, yeah, this might not have any physical consequences because we can just integrate over this term and it just vanishes. However, it was found by Tuft and others that there are non-perturbative effects that make this term physical. So we have semi-classical and quantum effects that lead to non-vanishing boundary terms there. So we know these terms exist. We know that this GG tilde term has a large contribution to the eta prime mass, so the same physics that is making this theta term physical is the same physics that is giving mass to the eta prime meson that we have observed. So This is a small summary of what's happening in QCD. We know we have an approximate flavor symmetry. If we look at the three lightest quarks, the up, down, and strange quark, this approximate symmetry is a U3 vector cross U3 axial symmetry. And then we have the quark condensate that's spontaneously breaking the symmetry down to U3 vector, which is then giving rise to pseudo-Goldstone bosons. And what I said before is that historically, it was a puzzle why this eta prime meson was so much heavier than its eight other companions. And the reason, the resolution, are exactly these non-perturbative effects. So on top of this very small explicit mass contribution coming from the small quark masses, we get an additional effect, which is coming from non-perturbative physics, which is this GD tilde term, and that is contributing into this mass of the eta prime meson. So the eta prime meson is the pseudo-Goldstone boson associated to this anomalous U1 symmetry. And the last thing that we know from QCD is that we have a quantity called the topological vacuum susceptibility. So it's just the correlator GD tilde in the limit of vanishing gluon momentum here, which is non-zero in pure glue. And it was possible to show, well, that was done by Schiffmann, Weinstein, and Sakharov, to connect this topological susceptibility to an order parameter of chiral symmetry breaking in QCD. So we have an inherent connection between this susceptibility and the quark condensate that we know in QCD is non-zero. So now, one thing I would like to emphasize is that these effects, they don't require confinement and they don't require the UE completion of the theory. And I would like to highlight that not only QCD contains a theta term, but also gravity contains a term that looks structurally very similar. So we have a theta parameter, theta g. R is the Riemann tensor, R tilde is the Hodge dual. Hodge dual means that we have an epsilon tensor in here, so we have a non-trivial contraction here. But in gravity, it's still an open question whether this term is physical or not. So what I mean with this is that also in gravity, this term is a total derivative. So it might be that we can just integrate it away. It is, however, also possible that there are non-perturbative effects that make this term physical. This has been a very long-standing debate. So we have something like gravitational instantons, wormholes, micro black holes. We have a lot of non-perturbative effects in gravity that we haven't fully understand so far. So this has been a huge debate. And what we would like to do is we don't want to enter this debate from a theoretical point of view, but we would like to take a different approach. So from a theoretical point of view, it depends on the formalism you use, what kind of UV completion of quantum gravity you assume, whether this term is physical or not. So we don't want to enter this discussion, but we want to assume this term exists and then want to examine what kind of consequences this has for the Stannard model and whether there are any consequences for the fermions of the Stannard model, then on which energy scales this could happen and whether this term might be already ruled out just by these considerations.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Because I've studied your paper and this point has often confused me. It's probably my confusion. If I could somehow take QCD and turn off the topological susceptibility, dual correlator at zero at large distance, are you saying the constituent quark masses would go to zero?
I mean, if the,
is
you mean
the
in pure glue?
Masses being the 300 MeV scale constituent quark masses. And the reason I get the impression you're going to assume that here, that the topological susceptibility at large distance implies the constituent quark mass.
I mean, the topological susceptibility vanishes if we, for example, have a massless up quark. And so what I'm saying here, maybe I wrote this in a bit confusing way. So this here, if you have the topological susceptibility non-zero in pure glue, and then we couple, let's say, quarks to this, then we can actually have this this connection between those two. Or what's your question? Like even
Maybe I'm asking questions should be asked of Schiffmann, Weinstein, and Zakharov. But
yeah.
I get the impression that people are taking a tight relationship between constituent quark masses, which I don't think of as having anything to do with GG dual. I think of them as coming from a BCS-like, Namujono-Sinio-like effect. But there seems to be an implicit and correlation here that the topological susceptibility is driving the constituent quark masses.
So the susceptibility is driving the condensation, and then what, how people usually...
That's not the way, it's not the way I look at QCD. Mm-hmm. QCD is the condensate being driven by a scalar bound state that's formed, and it gets a valve a la Nemujolosinia, which is just strong treatment of large N QCD, strong gluon exchange. It doesn't have to do with the topological susceptibility.
Yeah, so the way how Shiffman, Venchin, and Sakharov describe it is exactly then the opposite. I mean, they show that if you have the susceptibility, you can have this one-to-one correspondence to the quark condensate. So if you have no susceptibility and no non-perturbative effects, you won't have the condensate that is formed. So you can write this. So this is the approach that we took. You can write this GG tilde as a total derivative of a three form, and then write a low energy effective field theory of this three form. And then you can show that this susceptibility is inherently connected to an order parameter of chiral symmetry breaking. But if this susceptibility is zero from the very beginning, then we wouldn't expect to have this this order parameter of chiral symmetry breaking. That's at least how I...
It's sort of at large n,
yes.
Q by Q is still not equal to zero, because you don't have lattice values.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And also in one space, one time, then you see Q by not equal to zero, there are no instances for that. So I think the question is indeed why you're not confusing two different dynamical phenomena here.
Some other assumption going on, in other words, to make that connection. I think in large N, you turn off the GG dual effects, which is
true. It's they're both non-perturbative.
Yeah.
The question is the U1 singlet sector, how does it talk to the SUN flavor sector of chiral symmetry breaking? Are they connected in your mind, or are they separate? Is that one way of thinking about your question?
It's related to what? But the U1, the constituent quark masses, I think of as personally, maybe I'm missing some point here, do not connect directly to the GG dual correlator. They're due to additional physics, which we think of as BCS-like condensation, making a Cooper pair that's a zero plus sigma meson, and it condenses. And we can treat that without ever talking about topology, and it's a very good fit. This chiral constituent quark model, Lanoir, Georgi, et cetera. Weinberg used to say, we need a theory. Like Gell-Mann used to say this all the time in the mid-70s, we need a theory of constituent quarks, but we also need the pions at the same time. What does that mean? But that theory you can treat. And then GG dual comes along to elevate the eta prime. And that's going to have some mixing effects with things, but it's not the dominant mechanism giving us the constituent quark. I'm raising this question because I really like your work. But I've gotten confused about this point, because I know at some stage you're going to have to make neutrino masses the NL analogs to constituent quark masses.
Yeah, so the analog there is that we get a neutrino condensate, and this through the self-coupling gets... But is the question whether this goes the other way around as well? So if you start, for example, with a quark condensate from some mechanism like NGL, whether this requires a topological susceptibility or not? Because, I've never actually seen it from that way. I think it's a really good point. Because if the susceptibility is non-zero, when you relate the susceptibility just by having this low energy effective field theory to the order parameter of chiral symmetry breaking, if you have this non-zero, then having a non-zero order parameter should follow from that, right? So you're just saying that on top of that, you would have the order parameter anyway?
I'm saying if I could turn off Girard's instantons,
yeah,
then I would still see 300 MeV quarks, but I'd see this darn eta prime light, and it would mess up the Gell-Mann-Kubo mass formula. It's just not the way nature works.
Yes.
The way nature works is, in fact, to turn on GG dual, and its main effect is a U1 anomaly. It raises the eta prime mass.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, in my mind, have... And so something Shiffman, Weinstein, and Zakharov, I thought Shiffman was going to be here, are doing is connecting these things together. And maybe that's plausible, but it's surprising to me.
Yes, because I thought that...
Independent dynamics. They're both non-perturbative, but they're independent dynamics. One's very BCS-like, the other's very instanton-like.
Yeah, so how I understood is that this effect would nevertheless like contribute, so because you have this connection. Yeah. So even if you don't have the particular QCD dynamics that are giving rise to the QRQ, as long as you have the susceptibility, you give rise to the order parameter which you identify with a condensate. But yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I have to think about it further. Because they're explicitly making this connection. And yeah, I've never actually thought about the large n limit where you can turn off this the susceptibility, and then the connection wouldn't hold true anymore. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. So let me continue here so we can maybe also discuss further over lunch. What was shown in several papers, for example, by Dvali, Jakif, and P, and also Folkerts and Franca later, was that if we have theta terms in both sectors, then we know that we should have a similar topology structure. So as I said before, for example, gravitational instantons are assumed to contribute to the theta terms, just as we know in QCD. QCD instantons are contributing. And on top of that, we also know that we have chiral anomalies in both sectors. So this is independent of the assumption of the physicality of the theta term. So this chiral anomaly has been used, for example, for gravitational leptogenesis in the early universe. So this is independent of having a theta term. And it was shown in those three papers is that under this assumption, we would give rise to chiral symmetry breaking and therefore massive pseudoscalars, a massive pseudoscalar which is analogous to the eta prime meson of QCD. So yeah, I don't think I can go into all the theoretical details of this mechanism, but the basic idea is that, as I said before, you can write the theta term as a total derivative of something called the Chern-Simons 3 form, which is given by ADA minus 3 halves AAA, where I'm omitting all the indices here. And in the gravitational case, we have a similar 3 form just with the Christoffel connection. And if you then write down a low energy effective field theory for this three-form field, which carries no propagating degrees of freedom, so this is just a different description of the topological sector of both of the theories, so we're not adding any new physics when we just rewrite the sector in terms of the three-form field, then we know how this field is coupling through the fermionic sector as soon as we couple fermions to the pure gauge theory. We know this from the anomaly equation, and then one can write down the equations of motions of the system, one can integrate over them, and then finally write down a vacuum correlator. So this formula was the one obtained in Schiffmann's, Weinstein's, and Zakharov papers. So we have the quark masses and then the quark condensate. So we see that their argument was that what we discussed, if we have the susceptibility, you can relate this to the order parameter of chiral symmetry breaking in QCD, which is Q bar Q. And they also pointed out that if the quark mass is zero, then the susceptibility is vanishing, which means that we don't have any strong CP problem anymore. And on the gravitational side, if the arguments on the QCD side hold true because they're independent of the microscopic aspects of the theory, we would get the same for the lightest fermions of the standard model and in general for all the fermions of the standard model. But which ones are contributing to this effect is dependent on where the energy scale is, where all of these effects happen. So we start with taking into account the three lightest fermions of the standard model analogously to the lightest quarks in QCD. Then we know we have an exact U3 vector across U3 axial symmetry if the neutrinos don't have any hard masses. So it's slightly broken the symmetry by electroweak effects, but we can ignore this for the discussion here. Then we know we have a chiral anomaly. So this is something, it's nothing new. This is used for, as I said, gravitational leptogenesis. And then what we were able to show is that if these arguments by Schiffman, Weinstein, and Sakharov hold true, this relation that they found out between the susceptibility and the order parameter of chiral symmetry breaking should hold true also in the gravitational sector. And as far as I know, for the QCD case, one can show that the entire SU3 axial symmetry is broken. In our case, the only thing we can show is that this U1A symmetry has a spontaneous breaking effect. So we have this condensate should form at least in one of the neutrino channels. But if this contribution to the neutrino masses, which is arising from this effect, if this should affect all the neutrino flavors, in that case, we need to break the entire flavor symmetry in the neutrino sector further down. And in this case, we don't get only one pseudo-Goldstone boson. So this one, this eta nu, the analogous particle to eta prime, this was already discussed in those previous papers by Dvali, Jakiv P, Folkatz, and Franke. But this would also give rise, in our case, to 14 additional Goldstones if we break the entire flavor symmetry. So that's the general setup of the model. We start with these effects that are making the theta term physical in pure gravity, which means that the susceptibility should be non-zero. Then there is a new scale in the system, which sets the scale of this correlator. So in QCD, this is the QCD scale, and we know it's parametrically, it's very close to the scale of strong coupling in QCD. However, as long as we don't know what kind of new physics is making this theta term in gravity physical, we can't compute or predict this energy scale where this correlator becomes important. So we take this as a free parameter to see whether these effects might already be ruled out on all the energy scales, and then we don't need to take into account the theta term anymore. So we have this new scale. We know it should be parametrically suppressed with respect to the Planck scale, so either exponentially or power law suppressed, as it is the case for non-perturbative effects. And we call the scale lambda g, and we treat it at the moment as a free parameter that we phenomenologically constrain. So this is the pure gravity case. Now we couple the fermions of the standard model to it. We saw on the previous slide that we have a neutrino flavor symmetry if we assume neutrinos to be massless in the early universe. And we were able to show that you should have a spontaneous chiral symmetry breaking through this anomaly equation, which you can show on the level of this effective field theory for the three-form field C. So we have a condensation of neutrinos below the scale, and this gives rise to new Goldstones. So the eta nu is a massive one, which gets the mass through the anomaly, just as in QCD, where the eta prime gets a mass through the QCD anomaly through these non-perturbative effects like instantons. And on top of that, we have additional Goldstones, more than in the QCD case, because we have to break the symmetry further. So we have 14 additional ones, and they're almost massless. So we have tiny contributions from electroweak effects, but we can neglect them for everything that follows. Yeah, so the main ingredient of this model is that we have this self-coupling of the neutrinos to the condensate. So we get some small effective neutrino mass generation through this non-perturbative coupling. And we discussed that in QCD, something similar happens. So you can write down this Tuft vertex. So in QCD, for example, the Tuft vertex is giving a contribution to the up quark mass. So we have here the up quark masses, and then we have here down quark, strange quark, and you can close the legs by the hard mass insertions in the QCD case, so we get an effective mass contribution to the up quark. And in our case, we also have three neutrino generations. So we have a closing off with the condensates, and we have a non-perturbative coupling. And this structure of this vertex is given by the anomaly in the system, which is analogous in the QCD and the gravitational case. So we have different mass contributions. The most important one, so you have a mass contribution, for example, to this eta nu particle from the anomaly. And then you have a spontaneous symmetry breaking effect. So you can write down an effective potential of all the order of all the invariants of this symmetry breaking order parameter, which we called X here. X is nothing else than just the neutrino condensate for the different flavors. And in principle, you should add an infinite amount of higher order invariants. And we were able to show is that if you already include up to quartic order invariants, you can give rise to a mass hierarchy. So in QCD, we know that the mass contributions are equal. So the condensates are equal, but in the neutrino case, if we want to describe the phenomenological situation where the neutrino masses are different, then we need to have a mass hierarchy and therefore different neutrino condensates. So if you write this here diagonally in the mass eigenbases, x1, x2, x3 have to be different from each other, and this is dynamically obtained by the minimization of the potential. But this is something one can't predict theoretically. So this is something where we have to take the phenomenological input and see, okay, we need to have a potential that generates the hierarchy, but the masses could also, just based on the symmetry breaking pattern, could be equal, could be vanishing, could be anything, but they could also be hierarchical.
So again, not to beat this point, but if you take M up equals M down equals M strange to zero in QCD, are you saying you will not have a heavy eta prime? You're somehow saying GG dual goes away. GG dual, the instantons don't go away if I take M up, M down, M strange to zero. You have Gerard's determinant, Tov's determinant. The eta prime is heavy. The eight NGBs, pi on, k on, eta, become massless. That's the way QCD should work. So
no, it doesn't go away. So as one can see from the anomaly equation in the QCD case here, so the eta prime mass is given through this equation. So if MQ is equal to zero, it doesn't matter. You still have the huge GG dual mass contribution. So this doesn't go away. No, I mean
the MQs from GG dual.
No. The MQs here are the hard quark masses from the Higgs mechanism. Yeah, so they're explicitly breaking the U3 symmetry and therefore giving a contribution here to the anomaly equation. But they're not connected
you said M up goes to zero, you meant constituent quark mass, about 300 MeV masses. I'm confused.
So what is the MQ on the blackboard, I guess?
No. So the MQ on the blackboard, this quantity here measures. No, so there are two different effects. So the topological quantity here, this topological susceptibility, you have a contribution into the eta prime mass if this term here is non-zero in pure glue. So if you look at pure glue, but if you then to pure glue couple the quarks and then you have a massless quark, then your susceptibility will vanish. But this is something, I mean, the susceptibility is the, yeah, it becomes.
The determinant. Tov's determinant is still there if the up quark mass, down quark mass, strange quark mass go to zero. That's the effect of tunneling. That's the instanton dilute gas approximation to the effective action. That does not go away.
But your susceptibility, which is
the I theta, maybe that theta goes to zero, but the determinant is still there. Am I wrong?
But the susceptibility, which is measuring the strength of CP violation, this vanishes if you have zero hard quark masses.
The thing that elevates the eta prime is the determinant of psi bar left, psi right, those are quarks, determinant with respect to flavor. That makes the eta prime heavy. That's still there when theta goes to zero.
Yes.
Theta is just a measurement of how the block wave structure of the vacuum is set up. It's still occurring, and that determinant is still there. So the eta prime is heavy. Pi on, k on, and eta are now massless. Now I turn on the little MQs, pi on, k on, eta, get their normal masses satisfying the Gell-Mann-Okubo mass one. So I don't see, if you have a topological susceptibility, your neutrinos will develop a Tov determinant, but they won't develop individual M nu e, M nu mu, M nu tau.
They won't develop hard masses, but they would develop, like just as in QCD, where you have the effective mass contribution.
There's no analog of the chiral symmetry breaking of SU3 cross SU3 to SU3 vector. It's not happening. You're explicitly breaking a U1 symmetry. You're not breaking the SU3 left cross SU3 right.
Yeah. So you're having an explicit breaking from the anomaly, and then you have a spontaneous.
U1X.
Yes.
Because you're not breaking SU3 cross SU3.
No, so this is only explicitly broken in the QCD case, but in the neutrino case, so here, just for for illustrative purposes to see the connection, the similarity between those two cases, I have introduced a small explicit hard neutrino mass. But in the end, if we want to generate the neutrino masses, this mu term here will vanish. So we won't have a hard mass contribution. We would only have an effective one.
Does that come from this
topological? No. This is not coming from topological effects. No. So this is an explicit. So in the QCD case, this mq is coming from the Higgs. And here, just on the basis of the derivations of writing down this effective low energy theory, we have kept in the neutrino sector also this explicit hard mass to be non-zero, and we send it to zero in the end. So this is not the effective contribution. Yeah. Mm.
The determinant generates several things. There's also the eta is much heavier than the pi.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's also the fact of the inciton.
Yes.
Besides that, the eta prime is again heavier than that. That also depends which lines you close by mass terms.
Mm-hmm.
And which I know. So you get a whole mass hierarchy.
Yes.
Something like that, I could imagine, would be great if you can pull that trick that have to be the similar thing. Subsort inciton.
Yes, so this is the starting assumption that we need some kind of non-perturbative effect, for example, an instanton that is making the theta term physical. So in QCD, we know we have certain instanton contributions. We also have fully quantum contributions, so not the semi-classical instanton, but fully quantum 1 over n effects. So we definitely need something to make this term physical, and then we can have similar effects, yeah.
Do you mean to explain the hierarchy? Professor Tufts,
It's the other way.
You mean if you could pull this trick to explain the hierarchy in the neutrino masses themselves? Is that what you're talking about? Or
well,
what?
It would be great if it would be possible.
Okay, I'm just trying to
understand what that is. The thing about gravitational instanton, you couldn't find anyone which does the job, right? Anything like that. There's a very famous, nice instanton, the Hutchinson instanton,
mm-hmm, yeah.
Which looks like it has all the right smell to it, but that's where it ends. It has the right smell, but the equations don't seem to work out. Okay?
Yes.
Okay.
And these instantons are usually close to the Planck scale.
This is
an additional thing. So people have tried to use this in order to have a seesaw mechanism, in order to contribute to a right-handed neutrino mass, for example, to suppress then the observed neutrino mass. This has been done previously, yeah.
But
the point we want to make here is that if these effects, so one would assume that these effects become important at the Planck scale, and or let's say exponentially or power law suppressed with respect to the Planck scale, but still close. However, if you by this argument with the consequent condensation in the fermion sector, then you can't have this at the Planck scale, because you can't have condensation in the entire fermion sector, because then this would completely mess up everything we see in the standard model. So
the thing about the Hutchinson instanton is that it does not depend directly on the Einstein-Hilbert action, because that's zero.
Mm.
But the action which is not zero is the Young-Mills action. Or the electromagnetic action, so that which is one of alpha basically, so that so the thing generates an exponent of the order of e to the minus one of alpha, which is roughly the right kind of thing that you're looking for anyway.
Mm.
But there it stops as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so there were a lot of works trying to explain how this could be physical, but so far we don't have, from a theoretical point of view, we don't have any effects that exactly match with the number of zero modes and everything to the fermions we have in the standard model, and especially to the neutrinos. So the approach that we took is just to see whether this is possible in general to have this effect. So we could actually show that if this effect is really happening, then we would have very clear experimental predictions that we could rule out in the next 5 to 10 years. And I don't think that the quantum gravity community will be so fastly progressing that in the next 5 to 10 years, we would know that this term exists. So we thought it's just faster and more economical to see from a phenomenological point of view whether these things actually exist at all. So if we can show that this is not allowed, then there's no real need to pursue this direction further. Yeah. But it's true. So far, from a theoretical point of view, we don't have that much input. From a phenomenological point of view, we have way more input. And this is something we found interesting to look at. And the last point I wanted to make here for the neutrino mass generation is that so far I've considered Dirac neutrinos, so nu bar nu. However, it also works for the Majorana mass case. So independently of whether neutrinos are Dirac or Majorana, we will always have a symmetry, a Yuan symmetry that is anomalous with respect to gravity. And then the entire argument follows, just the structure of the condensate and the number of Goldstone bosons, for example, would change. Okay, so now the most important part from a phenomenological point of view is to see where these effects could happen. So I said previously that the symmetry breaking scale is conventionally assumed to be, how much time do I have left? It's like five minutes maybe? Okay. okay, so I will go quite fast through the phenomenological section. So the most important point of the most important question we have to ask is on which energy scales this could happen. So theoretically, we would expect this close to the Planck scale. And we see in the following that we think this is impossible. So for that, we just make one small simplification. We assume that the scale of the condensate is equal to the scale of chiral symmetry breaking and is equal to this temperature in the universe where this phase transition is happening. So we know this, these scales are parametrically different, but just for simplicity, we are for a second assuming them to be equal. And then we see that there's one direct bound that we see from phenomenology. First of all, this symmetry breaking scale has to be much smaller than the QCD scale. The reason is that gravity couples universally to all fermions. So if we have a condensation effect for all fermions, this would contribute, for example, into the quark condensate. And this is constrained, any kind of contribution is constrained to be smaller than the QCD scale. So this entire regime, independently of the neutrino mass mechanism, independently of this mechanism and the model, we see that these effects can't be there at all the high energy scales where we would, from a theoretical point of view, would expect them to be. And on top of that, it should also be much smaller than the electron mass because we get a contribution not only to the mass, but we also have these self-interactions in the electron sector, which are very strongly constrained. So this lambda g has to be much smaller, and all of these constraints are already pushing into this electron revolt, electron volt regime. And there's one very precise upper bound coming from cosmology if we look at the neutrino mass model, because we know that neutrinos are free streaming in the early universe. So if we have any kind of new neutrino interactions, and we have also these new goldstones in the neutrino sector where the neutrinos are annihilating into, all of this new physics can only happen after photon decoupling, because we know very precisely the cosmology of the early universe. And photon decoupling is happening at temperatures of around 0.3 electron volts. So we have an upper bound there. And we have a lower bound from the neutrino mass splitting if we want to explain the masses, because the heaviest mass in the minimal case is 50 milli electron volts. And with a coupling of 4 pi, we see that the condensate should be at least 4 milli electron volts. And there's an additional lower bound, which is again model independent, is that we see from gravitational precision measurements on very large scales down to millimeter scales, we see we can't have any new forces that are competing with gravity. And this millimeter scale is corresponding roughly to inverse milli electron volts. So we see that we're only left in a really small window where these effects could still be possible. So one might conclude, some people might conclude, okay, these effects should be at high energies, so just forget about them. What we're saying is that, okay, if these effects are existent at all, they should be here. So let's see whether we could rule this out in the near future with phenomenology, or whether we could actually find some hints towards these effects in the near future. So what we found interesting is to see that this scale here corresponds to the scale of dark energy. So dark energy is roughly milli electron volt to the power of 4. This is the energy density. And we can't really draw any conclusions here because we can't solve the cosmological constant. We can't say why the Higgs condensate is not contributing to dark energy. But we see we have one contribution, which is the only one generated through the gravitational side and the only one inherently connected to some new scale in the gravitational sector. So maybe I can just point out the most important phenomenological implication, which is the one that can provide a hint towards the model or rule it out within the next 5 to 10 years. So that's the main thing, I think, which is important to remember, is that neutrinos are massless in the early universe. And in the late universe, they gain their masses through this phase transition that I described at this temperature, which is approximately equal or smaller than the lambda G scale. And afterwards, the neutrinos are decaying, the heavier neutrinos into the lightest one by emission of these phi particles, and they start to annihilate. So the neutrinos and antineutrinos start to annihilate or bind up into those Goldstone degree of freedom. And we see that this is evading the cosmological neutrino mass bounds that we have and that are getting increasingly precise. So we're down at 0.12 electron volts for the sum of the neutrino masses, which is now already pushing to this minimal bound that we have from the oscillation experiments. So cosmology will be able to measure the neutrino masses within the next 5 to 10 years. So to see whether we have massive neutrinos in the universe, and almost no model can substantially weaken these mass bounds so much that we can't see these neutrino masses cosmologically. So if we see them cosmologically, this would, from my point of view, rule out the model, because we are predicting the annihilation of the neutrinos in the late universe. At the same time, it is still possible to have much larger masses than allowed by cosmology, and the Earth-based experiments, beta decay experiments like Katrin, will be able to measure the neutrino masses exactly in this regime, which is already probed by cosmology. So we have an upper bound of 2.2 electron volt for the electron neutrino, and Katrin will be able to measure this down to 0.2 electron volt. And if you look at these cosmological bounds, you see the bounds are already below this. So according to standard cosmology, Katrin can't see anything, but according to our model, they could measure quite heavy neutrinos, and the Katrin experiment will release their first data this month, and they will continue taking data in the next 5 years. So this is the terrestrial experimental side of this prediction that can be tested within the next 5 years. And I think I need to stop. So there's much more. We investigated impact on cosmic parameters, on dark energy. There's stuff for distinguishing Majorana and Dirac neutrinos and astrophysical neutrino decay, because we have different decay channels depending on whether neutrinos are Dirac or Majorana. There's some interesting stuff on the frontier of gravity measurements and new particle detection. But yeah, if you have any questions about this, you can just ask me over lunch or read the papers. And I would like to come to the summary, namely that pure gravity contains a physical theta term, and we, with this low energy effective approach, in agreement with what Schiffmann, Weinstein, and Sakharov did, is to point out a connection between this topological susceptibility and the condensation, where the masses on the blackboard are the hard masses that we use for computation that can be later sent to zero. And we see that from the condensation, we get a small effective mass generation, which is independent of the Higgs or seesaw mechanisms, and it works both for Dirac and Majorana neutrinos. And on the phenomenological side, we saw that these large neutrino masses are still cosmologically allowed. This can be tested within the next 5 to 10 years. And we have enhanced neutrino decays and a lot of other phenomenological consequences that leave signatures at the Katrin and Ice Cube and other experiments. So on the phenomenological side, there are more details in this in these two latest papers here. And in general, what we were observing, what we found exciting, is that we could see that there's a lot of new physics that could hide also at low energies. And we don't always need to go to the high energy sector beyond the standard model in order to suppress these effects. But if we have low energy physics, this can also efficiently decouple from high energy processes, because these bosons, for example, have a very low compositeness scale. They don't get produced in astrophysical environments. And the infrared gravitational vertex is softening in high energy interactions. Yeah, so this is everything. I'm sorry I'm a bit over time. So thanks a lot for listening. And if you have questions, you can ask them now.
Well, could I Could I ask a question? So normally we think that as the cosmological limit on the sum of the three neutrino masses marches down, that by the time they get to 0.05 eV, they definitely have to see something. You're mm-hmm. saying they could just keep marching below that and
yeah.
those.
So according to this model, you would just hit zero cosmologically, and you wouldn't see anything because all the neutrinos in the late universe have converted into massless bosons. So you just have dark radiation and nothing else. Yeah, and at the moment, still cosmologically, the most favored neutrino mass is zero. But yeah, we can't say anything yet. So it takes another 5 years.
And this Ptolemy experiment that helps to measure the cosmic neutrino background. They would not see it because they would have decayed.
Yes. So the Ptolemy can't. So the Ptolemy experiment that was proposed to measure the relic neutrino background can't see them unless we have an asymmetry between neutrinos and antineutrinos in the universe. Then not every neutrino would find an antineutrino partner to annihilate into. So we would have still a net neutrino number density in the universe that could be detected, but it would be reduced compared to what we know from cosmology. And we need some mechanism to explain the asymmetry. So minimally, yeah, we wouldn't see anything.
It's hard to imagine that neutrino masses could be explained this way without thinking of all the other fermionic mass terms in the standard model. So it would be more natural for me to say all quark masses might eventually have something to do with gravity, because they're freely adjustable parameters. So they are adjusted somewhere in the Planck domain by God knows what kind of mechanism. To me, it looks like these mechanisms are probably all related. So in QCD also, the eta and the eta prime, but those are, of course, not fermions, they are scalars.
Yeah.
So these scalar masses are then determined by the principle. So maybe it's a related but somewhat different kind of effect that refers to the fermions themselves. I wish I would have a good idea about what kind of effect that could be. But
that would be great.
I think you're looking at the right place and you just keep searching.
So we tried I didn't really talk a lot about this because I didn't have the time for that, but we had a follow-up paper, so we called it a domestic axion paper, so that was with Gia as well, where we tried to see how large the contribution could be, for example, in the quark sector, and whether we could explain, have a contribution, for example, to the up quark, and at the same time still solve the strong CP problem by having no contribution from the Higgs sector. So this is something we looked into. The main problem we are running into there is that we have a contribution, for example, when the scale gets too high, where this happens, then we would expect to have some new interactions, for example, between electrons and between hadrons, and these are very precisely measured. So if we can get some kind of hierarchy to have certain effects only for certain fermions, which we could have because it's at least the condensation is a spontaneous effect, so we could get a hierarchy. This would be very exciting, but we thought it might be the minimal approach to just start with the fermions where we are without any additional tuning are beyond the experimental constraints. So
you may have seen in my talk last week about black holes that there's a natural place there for a kind of instance, which is different from the Gucci Hansen, but could be related to this as well. The instance where the S3 sphere is collapsing somewhere. So it's a totally finite thing. It's very suggestive. But about the Gucci Hansen, the Einstein-Hilbert action that is zero, but it's the Young-Mills action, the gauge action, which you can make different from zero by twisting the boundary conditions. Now, the alpha is unfortunately too small. Each minus pi of alpha that you get out is a too big exponent. You don't want that kind of exponent. So maybe there are other couplings with alpha, which is slightly stronger than electromagnetic, which you don't know about today, which generate instantons of the right kind.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Yeah, we looked also into electroweak instantons. Actually, with Schiffmann and Weinstein, we were looking into having some contributions there because, for example, in SU5, you don't have an explanation for the neutrino masses, and we were thinking whether some left-handed Majorana mass contribution could be there, and yeah, the alpha is always the problem. So we saw it's a tiny contribution, so we can't explain it, but yeah, we tried to go into this direction to see if similar effects also in other gauge theories could explain the masses. Yeah, we will keep searching.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, yes,
Laurent. You're talking about the effect of the condensate on the fermion, but since it's an infrared effect, is there an effect on gravity itself, like the Newtonian potential, if you have a gravitational condensate?
So because it's a topological effect, we wouldn't expect the graviton propagator to be modified itself, but we have, due to these bosons, we have new forces that are competing with gravity on certain energy scales. And this is exactly what is giving these constraints that I talked about earlier, that is constraining these effects on all energy scales up to 2 millielectron volts, which is corresponding to distance scales to a millimeter. So this is something where constraints is coming from, yeah.
So when you say new scalars coming from the condensation?
Yeah, from the condensation. So these new bosons, so for the neutrino sector, it would be 1 plus 4g. Mm-hmm. These are, like, some of them are exactly massless. Some of them have tiny masses that still effectively give rise to long-range interactions on Hubble scale distances. So this is something that, because they're pseudoscalar, we don't have long-range interactions in that sector. But if we have a very low condensation scale, then we would have additional scalar contributions that are giving long-range interactions where they're ruled out in on larger distances. This is the reason why the condensation can't happen on larger distance scales than millimeter. Okay.
All right. Let's thank Lena again.